Blog Talk Radio.
Quality say, everybody act according to the season that they born in. Some in the night, some in the morning, some at noon. Summer winter, summer June. It's all cool. It's a natural. Science is a jewel. For me and mine's yours and yours. Let's move.
Welcome to another episode of Each One Reach One. This week we are happy to sit down with Skinner Lewis, the managing partner of the Lewis Law Firm. So Lewis is of Haitian descent and hails from Palm Beach County prior to this Florida region. Mr. Lewis has been seen as one of the up-and-coming advocates in the legal industry in Central Florida. Mr. Lewis has a staff that he manages of about five attorneys in his office and is on his way to doing big things. We'd like to welcome Skinner Lewis to the show. Mr. Lewis, thank you for joining us today.
Kwaku, thank you for having me. I really appreciate and enjoy to be part of this program.
Awesome. Well, let me start out by asking you a couple of questions. For those that don't know, can you tell us a bit about that interesting story going back to high school? By St. Lucia's High School, that's where you went, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I know about going back to high school. There's some shaky parts and some troubles, but can you tell us a bit about the teacher that told you in St. Lucia's that, you weren't headed anywhere and you wouldn't amount to anything? How did that impact you?
I like to begin with whenever I'm going back on the story, I like to make sure everybody understands the true story. We had, back in the days, we had a lot of different experiences, and I think it's very important to be able to look back on the path that you took and see some growth from that. Matter of fact, the individual, because I believe you went to St. Lucia's also, and she probably was there. And I'm sure she wouldn't mind me dropping her name now because I've seen her after the event, and she was very proud with what I was doing. The teacher at the time, her name, not teacher, but actually administrator, was Miss Dobart. I don't know if you heard of Miss Dobart.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And to be honest, looking at it in retrospect now, I understand what she was doing. It was kind of like that scared straight tactic. But at the same time, for me, it motivated me and kind of lit a fire under me to do what I need to do. Her concept was basically saying that the path that we were taking and the things that we were doing while we were in high school was not going to lead to any success. And to a certain extent, she was kind of right. But at the same time, I felt like it was also trying to box us in and put us in a category in which she didn't really give us an opportunity to prove ourselves. But I guess from what she was, the way we was acting, that's where she made her judgment call. But once she told me that, I internalized it, and it really made me say, you know what, you may think that we're stuck and we may not become something, but I made a decision, a personal decision for myself, at that point, that I would never let my current circumstance dictate and control my future circumstances. And so what I basically did was, although we still were doing some knucklehead things, I've always kept my eyes on the prize and understanding that, once I get past this part, then I can actually go and pursue the things that I think would make me better. But that was basically it, man. She sat us down. I used to be with another cat named Burson, another cat, Eugene. And back in the days, if you're familiar with South Florida, with the influx of the Haitians coming in from Haiti, there was a lot of tension between the Haitian and the Black American. And so back what we used to call back then a war. So we had a lot of fighting, a lot of trying to earn your respect and stuff like that. And that's the way that I came up. I came up earning my respect and And, you know, really, that's what have helped me really propel to the level that I am now. I'm always thinking about earning my position first, and that nothing is entitled to me. Yeah, but that's basically what happened. You know, she sat us down in the office, and she was like, the path that you guys are on, you're not going to be anything. You'll be dead or in jail soon. And, you know, I was waiting for her to say, like, but I still care about you guys. I'm just saying that, but she didn't say that part. And that's what I was like, wow, maybe she really does believe this. But if you know Ms. Dobar, it was tough love, too, because she's a sweet woman also. And the more that I grew and I understood where she was coming from, in all fairness, I saw what she was trying to do. She wanted to keep it as realistic as possible. And,
absolutely.
And I don't blame her for that.
Right. Well, growing up in Boynton Beach, Florida, can you give us some of your best memories of the area, good and bad?
Yeah, I mean, Boynton, man. Boynton Beach, we lived on the east side over there by Seacrest. And Boynton Beach consists of, you know, just about Hypoluxo to Woolbright. And that's East Boynton, east side of the I-95, was somewhat considered, you know, the ghetto or have you. Really, back then, you know, I would say in the early 90s, I guess all the older guys, it was a little rougher back then because, like, I don't think we escaped what all the other black communities did not escape either, which is the crack epidemic. So it did to our community what it's been doing to a lot of black communities across the nation. So, you know, for a lot of young brothers, they look at it as a opportunity. And, you know, for a lot of other people, they get actually devoured by the epidemic. So for us, you know, my parents, I was originally born in Lake Worth, and my parents moved to Boynton when I was about 3 years old. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of people that's of Haitian descent, like I talk to my mom all the time. The older generation, our parents, they don't like no trouble, you know.
And
that's their thing. You know, they feel like we came here, we have an opportunity, let's play it under the radar. We don't want no trouble. We just want to relax. But, you know, by them having that type of attitude, trying to keep me in the house when I was 4 or 5 years old, it made me like, okay, what's out there? You know, what are you trying to keep me from? And, I mean, I have stories, man. I remember us waking up early in the morning, man. Me and all the guys that I still run with till the day, I mean, linking up. Because this is what really is an interesting fact for me. Back then, I used to be afraid of what they call stickers. And stickers, I don't even know what's the correct term for them. I'm not a biology major, but stickers are basically those. It's like a plant that has the prickly things on it. And, you know, as I grow, I'm like, why am I afraid of stickers? And I remember because we used to wake up early in the morning barefooted, you know, and just go running around in the streets, either playing football or jumping fences and stuff like that. And that's a memory I've carried with me for a long time is it's like stickers didn't go away. I just started wearing shoes. So you know, so for me, man, that it was – really, we treated it, no matter what people want to say about East Boynton, to me, it is also a place that you find a lot of love and a lot of unity at the same time. Even though it's kind of like we segmented it by block to block, and this is the kids you run with, and this is your group and stuff like that, it still was, you feel a lot of unity, you feel a lot of love, and for all the other things that were going on in it, I still remember Boynton like that. As I got older and started, you know, running in the streets a little more, the streets kind of changed and had a different connotation. But for me as a kid, I loved Boynton, man. It helped me become who I was. I always wanted to hang around the older kids because my goal was to hear what they're talking about and bring it back to my friends. Like, yeah, this is what's going on. This is what you guys should be on. You know, that's kind of haven't changed with me, man. Till this day, everything that I experienced at this new level that I'm at, I like to bring it back to educate those behind me so they can actually streamline and move quicker through their progress.
Right. Well, speaking of, like, educating the kids and so forth, you volunteer at a number of different organizations in the Central Florida area. Can you kind of just what kind of spurred you and motivated you to, for example, serve on the board of the FAMU, what is it, Visitors Mentoring Committee?
Yeah, I mean, FAMU is my alma mater, so for FAMU, anything the school asks of me, that's my goal. Anything that they need, I'm there for them, you know, because they gave me the opportunity to be in the position that I'm in right now. So it was a no-brainer when I was approached by a young lady named Melanie Griffin, who's actually an attorney at Dean Mead. She approached me, and she wanted to see what can I do to help bridge the gap between the communications with the legal community, the greater legal community, and FAMU College of Law. I said, look, whatever I can do, I can serve as a liaison. Anything I can do to help, I would love to. And that's basically what we started. We started a committee that was actually mentoring the 1Ls as they came in. And really what we've actually
what's a 1L? Mr. Lewis.
Oh, excuse me. I'm assuming a few things. Yeah, a 1L is a first-year law student. Okay. It's basically broken down. Most law schools have a 3-year program. Some have a part-time 4-year program, which FAMU does. So each year is actually segmented into Ls. So you have your 1L, 2L, 3L, and maybe a 4L year. So basically the 1Ls are the entering class of law students. And for me, when I started law school, I wish I had somebody that was actually in the legal profession that I could reach out to. I was still blessed that a lot of the upperclassmen did take us under their wing. But for me, and traditionally coming from where I'm from, we really didn't have a lot of exposure with attorneys unless it was something that we had an issue or we were in trouble. And, you know, and that's still a major perception. For attorneys,
right.
People think you need attorneys when you're in trouble, but a lot of people don't understand a lot of attorneys can help you not get in trouble, too, by planning correctly. So, you know, that was really my goal. Even the way I practice my practice is more I want to be proactive and not reactive and get to the kids before they need before it gets to a point where there's no coming back from or it just becomes something that's very volatile. So, you know, that's why I got involved with the mentoring program with the Board of Visitors, and I'm also involved with the mentoring program with the Young Lawyer section of Orange County Bar. I'm the vice chair. Christopher Kess is the actual chair, and this is another program, and I tell people this all the time. You start off thinking, you know, I want to help out as a mentor, but I keep saying it, man. Every time I mentor somebody, I end up getting more from the experience than I think they even realize. And that's why I really enjoy it. I really enjoy having conversations with the up-and-comers and seeing how they're thinking and seeing what kind of world are they dealing with right now and what can we do to help them through that process.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I know you were recently featured in Rise Magazine. And can you tell us a bit about, you know, why they chose to feature you as one of the attorneys or young up-and-comers, as they termed in the magazine?
Yeah, I think, to be totally honest, man, all the work that I've been doing and all the grind I've been putting in, you know, I feel like an artist or like a music artist or an actor. You know, I really just feel that, you know, all the work that I've been putting in and genuinely, you know, without any ulterior motives or things like that, I mean, generally I care about seeing everybody around me do better because my thought process is if I make all those around me wealthy, it's only going to keep me wealthy, you know, continue doing business with each other and we grow with each other. And so for me, dealing with Rise Magazine, which is actually owned by Jabari Jackson, was a great opportunity. I did a lot of networking events. I started talking to other attorneys, and me and Jabari, we sat down. And at that point, he just said, man, you know, I talked to a lot of attorneys. I just haven't seen a lot of young brothers think about and see the world the way that you see it, man. And he told me about the articles that he was doing, and he even asked me if I wanted to write an article, and I wrote an article. I submitted it to him, and he was very impressed. I wrote an article about what do you need to think about when you're starting a business and stuff like that. And
right.
he says, you know what, a lot of the attorneys I'm going after, they've been practicing for 10, 15 years, 20 years, some of them, but I really think that you really are saying something and doing something that I would like to highlight. And, you know, it was a blessing at the end of the day, to be honest.
Right. Well, it's an amazing accomplishment thus far early in your career. And so far early in your career, you've been enjoying some success so far early with your practice. What do you attribute your early success to?
I always tell people, you don't need more ideas sometimes. You don't need more business sometimes. You always need more friends. And what I mean by that is business is nothing more than an extension of friendship and relationships. And I try to explain that to a lot of people because they believe that when they open their doors that the business will just automatically come. They believe in that old slogan, if you build it, they will come. If you build it and you market it and you protect it, they will come. There's a lot of other thought processes that have to follow that. And for me, to be honest, my success was basically the whole time I was in law school, I was always already planning that I'm going to step out on my own, and I started building real strong strategic partnerships and alliances while I was in law school. I looked at the students that I trust in their work product, I trust in their business acumen, that I know that if I dealt with them on a professional level, we could take it to another level. You know, I like doing a lot of social things. I love partying. I love doing all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to create the income and the wealth to keep those things sustained. So for me, that's what I did. I'm more of a person, like I like to say, I judge people by the character. I really, intelligence is important to me. But if you're a loyal individual and you're a dedicated individual, I will rather deal with you because I know at the end of the day, no matter what, you're going to try to accomplish what you say you're going to accomplish. Where you may have a lot of individuals that are intelligent, but they don't have the work ethic. So I try to infuse that with everybody that's around me, man. Work ethic is everything. Loyalty is everything. And we just got to stick to the plan. And we also have to be able to amend the plan. If we see that it's not working, we have to go ahead and look at it and just be as flexible as possible. And that's what's been really helping my practice out, man. I've been having great individuals around me. I haven't barely really advertised. All my business comes in from word of mouth, people calling me, people dealing with me, and people remembering who Skinner Lewis was and who Skinner Lewis is. You know, no matter whether I was on the wrong path or not, I've always been a guy that had to stick by my word and stick by what I say and really take care of everybody that's around me, man. So that's what I've been doing, and it's been working out well. I won't say that it's all roses. There's tough times, and you have to be able to make it through those cycles so you can see the good times too. And that's been my approach.
Right. That's a great approach. That's a very good advice that you're also giving, you know, for the listeners out there who are entertaining, jumping into the fray, you know, understanding what that entails. What kind of advice would you have for either, you know, young lawyers or students right now in law school that are, you know, contemplating jumping into the fray and starting their own practice?
Yeah, if you're going to start your own practice, the real reality for me is you have to be prepared to go hard for 5 years, sleeping maybe 5 to 6 hours max, and not just thinking that you're going to be a law practitioner, but also understand that you have to learn the business of practice and law. They go hand in hand. What I have found with a lot of small to other solo firms is they're great attorneys, but it's the business side that kind of gets caught up and really hurts their efforts of actually growing. For me, because I do a lot of corporate law and business law and stuff like that, I always start a plan with an end in mind. I always start a plan with an exit strategy so we don't lose everything if it's not going the way that we're going. And that's what I think people have to understand. You have to be able to separate your practice from yourself and be as objective as possible to say, am I doing the things I need to be doing? Practicing law by yourself as an actual business or a firm is not for everybody. Some people do need to go work for another firm because they're brilliant legal minds. But the actual management and administration side is something that the organization may get them caught up and clog their process. So I think first thing is be realistic with yourself. I know a lot of people do it because they have to do it, and I respect that. And even when you have to do it, you have to continue to educate yourself, not only on the area of law that you're practicing, but also on the practice needs that you need to actually be successful. So I would definitely say get a mentor. I am one that believes in mentoring wholeheartedly, and I would definitely say get a mentor, get someone you can trust, get somebody that's not a yes man in your circle, somebody that can tell you when you're making mistakes, somebody that can tell you when they feel like you're not going the right direction, and also be accessible to those type of criticisms and or suggestions. You know, don't take it to heart. You're a business person. You got to understand the reality that you're facing as soon as you jump into something of that nature.
Right. Well, I think you covered it thoroughly there, and it's a great piece of advice, Mr. Lewis. You did touch and speak about mentoring and so forth, and I want to ask you, in your circle and, you know, in your community, what do you see as the biggest impediment when it comes to mentoring specifically young black males?
What I would like to say is, for me, I like to give some of my educational background why I think the way I think and why I move the way I move. And what I mean by that is undergrad, I did my major in legal studies and I minored in African-American studies. And I really, to be honest, the African-American studies courses were some of the most difficult courses I've ever taken. And the reason I think it's that difficult is because the premises that they're trying to actually promote are premises that may go against the traditional way of thinking and traditional history that we're taught. So therefore, they have to be thorough. They have to say why these things are wrong and why is these concepts or perceptions that we have of ourselves, what are the issues with it? It has to be a good analysis. And for me, after I took those African-American courses, I remember going back to Palm Beach and, you know, like they say, we get this bug. It's kind of like when you first get saved in church, you want to tell everybody about Jesus. I remember, you know, learning these things in class, and I was like, man, I can't wait to go back to Palm Beach and tell my boys about this stuff. And I would get back to Palm Beach, and I would be like, yeah, man, I just learned about this in Egypt, man. Did you know that we there's a black history in Egypt, and we had universities, and we had schools, and we had a civilization, blah, 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 and stuff like that. And all my boys are looking at me like, yeah, but what does that mean for us today? You know, that thing, I got to be at work in a little bit. You know, the other one's the thing, I got real bills to pay. I got real problems. I got real problems in the street, stuff like that. How does that correlate to what I'm going through today? And, you know, I didn't really have an answer for them. They're right. I mean, at the end of the day, learning all this stuff, what does it do for them in their position today, man? And really what I think it is giving our people, especially young black males, a sense of history, a history that doesn't begin with slavery, to make it seem that we started from nothing and everything that we are today. We have to think America for giving us the ability to be something. We have to go deeper than before we came to America. We have to go back to the continent of Africa and see what were we doing then. Not that our civilization was perfect. There's no perfect civilization. Yet we did have our own institutions. We did have our own religions. We did have all these other things. And in understanding that, it gives you a sense of being. It gives you a sense of who you are without starting from a position of nothing. You start from a position of something that may have had a downturn due to the external factors of the world and internal factors of your own factions and routines and stuff like that, but you still can go back up to what you used to be. And that gives it's more of a story of hope and understanding, and that's what I really see when I talk to the youth. They continually, because that's what they're taught in school, is that is American history, but we have to go deeper into world history. And once we know our history, we can adequately push for the educational system to include more of our history, and not just a history of slavery, but a history of greatness, a history of empires, a history of so many other things that we've accomplished before, you know, slavery actually occurred. So, you know, that's what I like to do. You know, although I consider myself a legal scholar, I like to learn about the law and stuff like that. My question is, what does the law and what does the law mean for real things that are happening in the world? Not just hypotheticals, but how do we translate and actually correlate these type of things that we're researching and all these other things? How do we make that relevant into these kids' lives. And you know, that's my approach, is to really tell them they can be whatever they want to be. You know, they didn't come from nothing. They came from something, and they can be the greatness that they seek. You know, it's all internal. So that's why I really love mentoring, because I love seeing their eyes light up. I love seeing them really take these type of things in, man, and it's very enjoyable for me.
Right, right. Well, I guess you know, we're speaking a lot about mentoring and kind of just history, but, you know, I grew up with my father, but my father was just also just came to this country, and he was trying to do what he had to do to make sure everything was right for us. So he really didn't have time to kind of go outside and make me join different clubs or hook me up with a mentor, even though he served as a great role model.
Right.
To myself. But there's a difference when you have someone that's in the system here that knows, you know, the ins and outs of it. What do you think that may have done early on if you had that kind of person, you know, in your corner?
Well, you know, what's crazy is, and that's why I say mentoring, I don't want people to think when you're a mentor is such a daunting task. Mentoring can be something that you may only say one statement to a child, that you just hold them accountable to that statement. Or you may be able to just introduce a new way of thinking to that child, and you change their life forever. So mentoring is not in the sense of something that has to be so structured. Sometimes you just walking down the street and seeing a kid doing something wrong, you ask him, why is he doing it? Well, you know, what is he trying to get out of it? And you let them know, you know, and that's what they love. They love knowing where somebody came from, where they came from. Because now they don't feel like they're being judged or being told to do something else, you know. So you got to be able to show that you understand, and what you're trying to do is show them a better way. And for me, that the reason I say that mentoring is not a structured thing, for me, I've been lucky enough to draw inspiration from the smallest things in the world. And I think that's what helps me remain successful and remain optimistic, no matter how bad things seem around me. When I was in, I believe I was a 10th grader I was either in the 10th grade or a junior. I was part of a group called SAD, Students Against Drunk Drivers. And yeah, they had an attorney come in. He was a criminal defense attorney. And he was also a volunteering attorney. And he came in, and he was giving us a speech. So, you know, I'm sitting there, everybody's like, we have to listen to this boring attorney. You know, the way we look at attorneys are like dry, boring guys, you know. We have this perception of mine of what an attorney is. And so I'm sitting there like, okay, we have to wait for this attorney. He's just going to talk all this crap and then, you know, whatever. So, you know, I'm sitting there. I see this two-door Porsche pull in. So first thing, I'm like, who's jumping out of that Porsche? You know, then this attorney jumps out. He has a big Cuban link bracelet on. And, like, he has this clean Italian suit on. And I'm like, who is this dude? You know, and he's an Italian gentleman, so he comes in and he comes up there and starts talking to us about drunk driving and what it means to be cool. You don't have to be, you know, wanting to hang out with the in crowd. You can be yourself, all this other stuff. And I'm just sitting there looking, while everybody may be listening to him, I'm just looking at his mannerisms. I'm like, yo, this guy, he's reminding me of the guys that I look up to off the block, you know, the guys with all the swagger and all the charm and stuff like that. I'm like, that's not how attorneys are supposed to be. Attorneys are supposed to be like clean cut, you know, cookie cutter type guys. And I had to talk to him after he was done talking, and I was speaking to him, and I was like, you're an attorney? He's like, yeah, I'm an attorney. And I'm like, you're not an attorney, man. I said, attorneys can't be this cool. And he's like, man, who told you that? He's like, I'm an attorney, man. He says, man, the beautiful thing about being an attorney is it's one of the only professions where your personality can actually be infused with your practice and your professionalism. And what he was basically saying was, like, you do not have to lose your identity to being an attorney. You always have your people that you want to serve and the people that you want to represent and help, and you can still be yourself as long as you keep those core values and you keep your integrity and you keep these confidential, all this type of thing. Things he was talking about that was over my head at the time, but he was just basically breaking it down, like, look, man, this is me. This is how I've always been my whole life. I'm just an attorney now. You know,
I cut you off, Mr. Lewis, but we are right. Our time is kind of dwindling on the show here. In 5 seconds or less, what do you see as the future? What does the crystal ball predict for the future of the firm and Skinner Lewis?
Well, I would definitely say hard work, and we're gonna get better, man. That's it. We're going to continue to get better. That's it.
Awesome, awesome. I thank you for appearing on the being a guest on the show today, and I wish you many success with your firm, with your practice, and out there in the community, what you do as well. And I appreciate you, man.
No, I appreciate you too, brother. Thanks for having me on. You take care.
Definitely. Thank you. That wraps up our sit down with Skinner Lewis. Join us next week, Wednesday, 7:30, same time, as we sit down with another young, dynamic professional that is also serving his community. Till then, take care.